Welcome to the Social Podcast, where no discussion or debate is off limits.
Hello and welcome. Mel and Lainey are off, but don't worry, we've got some great guests today. Journalist and co-founder of the podcast company Media Girlfriends, Hannah Sung. Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
We've got television host Aaliyah Jasmine. Hi.
Hey, guys.
And best-selling author of The Other Black Girl, Zakiya Dalila Harris. Welcome.
Hi.
We're so delighted to have you all with us, and we are starting with this story. Prince Harry has announced he is writing a memoir. According to the Duke of Sussex, the book will be a firsthand account of his life that is accurate and truthful, and it's expected to be out in late 2022. So what are your thoughts? What are you expecting out of this memoir? Hannah, we'll start with you.
You know, I don't know what to expect. And I think that ordinarily I would say that anybody who's writing a memoir should be mindful of their family members and, you know, what parts of their story is their own story and what parts of the story belong to other people, actually. But Harry doesn't come from any normal kind of family. And I really hope that he will tell all, you know, I say, Harry, go for it. Obviously, we've heard things from the Oprah interview that he did with Meghan. And I just kind of feel like, you know, the British monarchy is the firm, right? They're not just a family. They make a lot of money and they represent so many financial interests. While the world is going through a major racial reckoning with Black Lives Matter, and, you know, that is clearly a legacy of the transatlantic slave trade that the British Empire benefited from, and while Canada is in national mourning over finally, you know, confronting our history of genocide, ongoing legacy of residential schools, like, why should the British monarchy, why should this family not have some expose, you know, and have to like confront their own past and what happens with them as well.
I
feel that if Harry wants to be a whistleblower, then he should go for it in the spirit of, you know, the greater public good.
I mean, here, Zakiya, do you actually think that he will be honest? Like, he's going to actually talk about the dirt, like, let's say on his Uncle Andrew?
Yes. Yeah, I completely agree, Hannah. I think he should go for it. But I mean, given what we saw in that Oprah interview, I don't think he's really going to go for it. I mean, I'm dying to know. Yeah, Uncle Andrew, I'm dying to know about Archie, who said that really awful comment about him and his skin color. I mean, there are so many things that, you know, we could and should know more about that could really be used as a talking point to move further and really examine, you know, the history and the past of the monarchy.
Aaliyah, where do you stand?
Yeah, you know what, for me, my initial reaction was that this is an olive branch. I feel like he has ruffled so many feathers with his Oprah interview that this might be the olive branch. And to be honest, I do kind of feel like, look, he lives in this $50 million house here in California. He's talked openly about the need for money and security. And so I think, even though he's donating some of this $20 million advance to charity, I think he did it for the money. And I think
Interesting.
But you know what I will say? I will say this. After thinking about what Hannah just said, one thing did come to my mind where I will give him the benefit of the doubt. And maybe Anna's changing my mind a little bit here, but I kind of do feel like if after watching the Oprah interview, he said very openly that this last year of racial reckoning has really opened his eyes being with Meghan Markle and watching this happen through Meghan Markle's eyes and now raising mixed race children. And so I, giving him the benefit of the doubt, I would read this book if it was a story about the powerful growth coming from the descendant of the literal throne of English colonial power. I mean, I think that insight would be fascinating.
Well, here's Tracy's insight on Facebook. She wrote, "I am really disappointed in Harry. For all of the proclamations of wanting a private life away from media and duty, he can't seem to stay away from it. It sounds like he's in constant need of the public's reassurance that he is in the right of everything that has happened over the past few years." Tracy, interesting point. I will say the reason I'm not so looking forward to this is because of his age. I mean, the kind of memoir I like to read is someone who is of a certain age who has no, you know, what's left to give. You know what I mean? And they tend to be like the Hollywood memoir where like someone's like 80 or 90 and they can say everything they want about, let's say, Cary Grant, because Cary Grant's not going to care. And mm-hmm. if there's backlash on Twitter, they're not going to care because they don't know what Twitter is. Like Harry's 36. I was like, give me a break. I was in diapers at 36. I didn't have enough insight, you know?
I mean, yeah, I agree with you, Jess. I do think you have to be at a certain age. I think it's timely, though. Obviously, they're starting to, you know, tell a lot. I really do think the dishiest things, like maybe his relationship with Prince William. I can't picture him being like, man, my brother did this and then that happened. And Prince Andrew, I always suspected. I don't think he's going to go there. I mean, I just hope he writes about his mom. And I think that will be really, really interesting to hear more about his experience and maybe the kind of rigidity that he was expected to, you know, embody when he was trying to mourn. Like, I think there's a lot of stories in there about the kind of, you know, image he was supposed to uphold. And of course, I do kind of want to hear about the Vegas, the trip that shall not be named with the naked billiard party. Anyway, that might just be me.
Imagine if there's photos. Oh, wow. Okay. We may not all be married to the idea of Prince Harry's book, but did any of you say I do to wedding traditions? Someone wrote into a New York Times advice columnist because he and his fiance can't agree on whether their big day should include customs like the garter toss. So what are your thoughts on these types of traditions?
Yeah, I mean, I think I am, so I have to say, I am a child of divorce, so anything I say is probably definitely colored by that. But that being said, you know, my partner and I were engaged, and we've been having a lot of conversations about what we want our wedding to look like. And even though I'm a little bit of a cynic, I still kind of love a lot of traditions. I mean, the garter thing is weird to me. It's a very interesting tradition that I've never understood. But, you know, the father-daughter dance, that's something that I would love to do. You know, the other traditions of, you know, throwing the bouquet, I would love to see my friends going at it. So there are some that I would keep, but there are other ones that I would toss away. And I think it really depends on the person, you know? I mean, everyone has their own kind of idea of how they want to tie the knot, celebrate that special day. And, you know, if you want to do the traditional thing, I'm here for it. I love a good wedding.
Aaliyah, speaking of weddings, huh?
Yeah,
I know. I'm just like coming thinking up. About all my. You know what? I am with you guys. I like the garter thing. To me, has always been this weird tradition that I am just not into. But I will say this: I am not a traditionalist in any sense. I actually never wanted a wedding. I always wanted to elope. My fiance really wanted a wedding, and so we compromised and planned a wedding. A year into this pandemic, we have now had 3 canceled weddings. And I will say this, I have at this point become somewhat of an appreciator of the tradition that I wasn't before. And let me tell you why. I feel like at a time when we can no longer have the people we love around us when we're making the most important, you know, the most important promises to each other. That's heartbreaking. And like the idea of being able to exchange rings and tell each other you love each other and have your parents there to witness it, or even have like, you know, your bridesmaids, like these people who are your ride or dies, have your back, stand up for you and be like, don't mess with her. We have her back. We like stand for her. And I love those traditions. And I'm sad that those got, you know, stripped away from us. And so now that we are just eloping, which is what I originally wanted, I am mourning a lot of those traditions I never thought I would care about. So for what it's worth, from a pandemic bride, I do actually, I think there is merit in some of the traditions. I do not have that opinion about the garter toss.
It's so weird.
Aaliyah, I hope you get to work some of the traditions that you like into, you know, your experience of eloping. Because I agree with you, Aaliyah, and Zakiya, that it's about a mix of the traditions you feel strongly about. Like, what do these specific traditions even mean to you? You know, if you kind of do the things without thinking about the meaning, I don't really see the point. Like, I don't know if any one of us here understands what the garter toss meaning is. But in my own wedding, like, the incorporated things like... Oh, you did. Oh, well, can I tell?
I looked in. Apparently, it's hard to wrap your head around, but apparently, back in the Middle Ages, the people who would go to a wedding really wanted to sort of wait for the signs that the marriage had been consummated. Like, it was supposed to happen right away. And the crowds got so rowdy that the bride and groom, instead of having, like, their clothes ripped off, they would toss them like a garter to sort of appease the crowd. So, hey, that sounds like
fun. Something like that.
That's so funny.
Yes, and it's so gross.
It's so gross.
In the
Middle Ages.
It's so gross.
I don't know if it actually...
Well,
yeah.
It's also like a matter of these traditions often are to please other people, not the person who's actually getting married. And that's just such a prime example of that.
And Zakiya, don't you feel like a lot of these traditions is like people don't even know why they're doing them? They just kind of like, I would garner or wager that this guy doesn't know why he wants the garter toss. He just thinks it's cool.
Right. Can we just leave the last word with with Arlene on Twitter? She says, the whole current wedding process is out of date. From a man asking permission from the bride's family, getting down on one knee, spending big bucks on a one-day dress, wearing a veil, lifting the veil. So out of date and ridiculous. Arlene, I feel like you are my power animal, and I appreciate everything you just said. And I agree. Yes.
Love it. A new documentary about the life and death of Anthony Bourdain is raising ethical concerns over its use of audio deepfakes. So the doc Roadrunner contains sentences spoken by the famed chef that were crafted using AI technology. So where do you stand on these ethical concerns? And Aaliyah, I want to hear from you because you make documentary films.
Yeah, you know, I would never do this without making the public aware. You know, when you see when you watch a documentary and you've seen like reenactments, we've all seen reenactments, you always somewhere on the screen see somewhere written, this is a reenactment not based on actual events or not actual events, right? So I don't see how this should be any different. I feel like this may be crossing a little bit of a line and going down a bit of a slippery slope into the future of using this kind of technology for documentary filmmaking, in that documentaries are meant to document, right? And when you start doing things that are more scripted or a little more fake, whether it's with editing or other technology, where does that line go from becoming a documentary to becoming a reality TV type show, right? And so that's, I think, a really important differentiation.
But don't you think that all documentaries, sort of by their very nature, they do end up distorting reality in all sorts of ways to sort of fit the narrative of the story they're trying to tell?
You know, it's a good point, Jess. And I think that journalism schools will argue this point to death, right? Because the idea of documentaries really is that you come at it trying to show a pretty unbiased view. But you're right. The nature of a documentary is that you are taking a view where you could be at a protest, and where you choose to shoot your camera is automatically a bias in your storytelling, right? So if I decide to shoot one person versus shooting a whole wide angle in that moment, that is a completely different way and angle to tell that story. And so you could argue that, yes, there is a bias in the very nature of storytelling, period.
You know, Aaliyah, you say the word bias, and I think that's so important because when we think about people's deeply personal stories, you know, the deep faking of Anthony Bourdain's voice came from some emails that he had written to his friend. And I think that a filmmaker has to keep in mind, you know, how do I benefit from this film? If I want to do like an extractive kind of storytelling where I use every tool available to me to create the kind of narrative that I want, like, look at yourself and say, is this to benefit Anthony Bourdain's legacy? Is it to benefit like his, the people in his family, his fans, the public, or does it help me most as a filmmaker? And in that case, I think it's really good to make your decision-making incorporate those kinds of considerations. I also think that people in general are feeling very icky about this. And the filmmaker said, you know, well, we can have a documentary ethics panel about this later. I would argue you should have it before and be intentional about the decisions you're making. But it is true what he says. The public will be the kind of panel. And if the public is not into this, they can say so. And future filmmakers may say, oh, yeah, this is not really territory that the public is comfortable with.
I think that detail you raised, Hannah, though, is important, right? This is an email that he, Anthony Bourdain, did write and he did share. I'm curious as to why no one's talking about the ethics of the friend who shared it with the filmmakers. That could be an ethical question as well.
Yeah.
And the fact is, these were his words. And I mean, I do think it's a bit funky using this AI technology, but as you've pointed out, we do, as documentary filmmakers, you do, you know, create sentences that someone said in order to truncate it. And, you know, these things kind of happen all the time. I'm more concerned about, to be frank, about this kind of technology and the ethical implications of other ways in which it'll be used. I think overall...
Yeah, like if there's a nefarious filmmaker sin, like, yeah, like, and they create sentences that someone actually didn't say.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where I can see this going, which is much more troubling. Zakiya, do you agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that there is a future that looks very bleak in some ways if it is manipulated in that way. But, you know, I have to say, I didn't feel super icky about this at first. I mean, I had assumed before reading a little more into it that he had gotten permission, because for me, that is the most important thing, is getting the consent of Anthony Bourdain's loved ones. And it sounds like his ex-wife and him had a misunderstanding, because she's saying, of course, that she didn't have any record of him contacting her or asking about that. I could be wrong, though. But so that thing, that to me really stood out. But I think as a viewer, honestly, I don't mind it as much. I do think he should have said something at the beginning, but it's immersing the viewer in this experience. And they were words that he said. If they were making up the words, that's another thing, like you all mentioned. I think that's really important as well. But because it was his own words, I think that that is really what changes it. I also was thinking about the Tupac hologram that happened a few years
ago.
Which, like, was really weird. I think all of this is really weird, like, not gonna lie. But I have to say, you know, I think that this could be good for young people, just in terms of really, again, immersing them into, I mean, getting to see what Tupac's performance was like, getting to hear
people speak in their own words. It also makes it really creepy, right? Because it strikes this nerve into, like, we all have this digital footprint, right? So what's going to happen after we die? Will you take our photos off of Instagram? And then, like, and what will you do with my digital likeness? And will I have no say? Are there no repercussions for you doing that?
Right.
Like, that's weird.
Well, okay. I think the thing
I got goosebumps.
I just want to, I really want to get to this last topic because we don't have a ton of time left. So here, the world did watch Jeff Bezos blast off into space today. And while we keep hearing about the rich and the famous who are eager to leave planet Earth, there's one celebrity who had to back out. Ashton Kutcher recently revealed his wife, Mila Kunis, convinced him to skip out on a trip with the Virgin Galactic space flight out of safety concerns. So, Aaliyah, I want to start with you. I hear that you have an Ashton Kutcher story.
And, I do. Okay, so I will just say that I think Ashton Kutcher should do whatever he wants. Let Ashton Kutcher do what he wants. And the reason I say this is because I had a friend, I can't say who it is, but she was dating Ashton Kutcher when he lived in Vancouver. I think he was shooting the 70s show back then. But anyways, everyone was out one night and got back to his house. And he decided to tell, you know, it was a long night. There was some partying involved. And he decided to tell everybody about this genius idea he just had. The idea was that he was going to start filming himself pranking random people. And he thought it was so funny and all the guys would laugh. It would be this big bro show. And literally his girlfriend, who's my friend, looked at him and went, "That is the stupidest idea I have ever heard." Anyways, they broke up. He went on to, you know, produce Punk'd, which was a massive hit. And so I just feel like, let Ashton Kutcher do what he wants.
Zakiya, quickly, is your partner into like dangerous activities like this?
Yes. I mean, we met after he had his most dangerous streak, but I mean, he's a rugby player. He likes rugby a lot, which is maybe the most violent sport since you're not playing with any padding. I learned a lot about rugby over the last couple of years. But I mean, he's playing in a rec league in New York and got injured in the first game immediately.
Oh,
and I watched, you know, he continued to play and his parents were like, you know, why is he doing this? And I was like, you know, just gotta let him do it. It's the time he feels the most alive. So I, you know, I got to back up and let him go. But that is very different from going into space.
Hannah, does your partner have a danger streak?
He does not. My partner is quite risk averse, which is great for me because then I don't have to live with this narrative that Ashton Kutcher goes out in the world and says, well, when I got married and had kids, my wife said, don't take risks. You got married and had kids. Like, what do you think about your own risk, like taking? How about some ownership over that? You know. So I'm glad to have a partner where we have the same level of risk tolerance.
Oh, Zakiya, that's great. We can't, Zakiya, let you go without asking you about your book. It's called The Other Black Girl. It is getting rave reviews. Tell us, give us a little tease about what the premise is.
Yeah, absolutely. So The Other Black Girl primarily follows a young Black woman named Nella Rogers. She's been the only Black person working at her publishing house for the last 2 years, I should say. And she's so excited when Hazel, another young Black woman, starts working in the cubicle next to her. She's like, finally, I can have this safe space to talk about natural hair and all those microaggressions that all of my clueless white employee coworkers are sending my way. But of course, not everything goes as planned. And Nella starts to receive these very terrifying notes and starts to wonder if Hazel is a friend or a foe. So it's got that workplace politics, thriller, sci-fi, horror, just all the genres, everything but the kitchen sink. In this
it has everything for everyone. This is amazing.
Sounds good.
That's what I hope.
I have to read that.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Subscribe to The Social Podcast so you don't miss a fiery debate. Until next time, socialites.